The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Wanted to read to you from Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 23. The scripture says this, "Whatever you do, do your work heartily, as for the Lord rather than for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve." Well, I'm excited to welcome my guest to the program today, who found his calling in life as a football coach. And he was a football coach for over four decades. He started in high school and then advanced to the college ranks. And he was at the University of Texas for 17, 18 years with Mack Brown. And he's there a long time. But he won a national championship with Mack Brown in 2005 as the offensive coordinator of the University of Texas, with Vince Young as his quarterback. And he's a good friend of Barry Norton. Barry Norton was the coach at Texas High, and Barry was a member of our church. And so Barry hooked me up with Coach Davis, and so it's a joy to get to talk to him today. We're going to talk about the college football business from the inside. What do you see on the inside? So, Coach Davis, welcome to the program today.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I appreciate it so much, and I was reviewing your history. You've been in football since you were a young guy, played quarterback at Port Neches Grove just a few years after Bum Phillips went into higher ranks. Is that right?
That is correct. Bum was the head coach at Port Neches when I was a freshman, and at that time, freshmen was not in high school, so he left along with his son Wade, and they went to the University of Houston.
Yeah, Bum. They have a documentary about him. I saw something on Facebook about it. They call it "Love You, Bum." I'm looking forward to seeing that. I was in Houston during the "Love You Blue" era, and with Earl and all those guys. And
sure,
so looking forward to that. Okay, so you played quarterback in high school. And you knew the game from a young guy. So tell us about playing the position versus coaching the position.
Well, I don't think you have to have played quarterback to coach it, but I do think it helps.
Mm-hmm.
Because, understanding what a quarterback is going through, the pressure, especially the quarterback has to know everything. The running back is lining up, and he has a blitz pickup, and you have to tell him, hey, you got a first blitzer from 22 out. And at the same time, the center turned around and said, hey, I forgot the snap count. he's directing the protection in many cases, and then always the defense can bring more than you can block. So in that case, the quarterback is responsible to beat the last defender, with the football. So it's a fun position, but it's a complicated position.
Well, Greg, it seems to me that a good quarterback is critical. Maybe not as critical in high school. If you have a good running back, you can just run the heck out of the ball. I saw Pleasant Grove. Pleasant Grove is the team here in Texarkana, and I saw them play for the state championship against Quiro. And Jordan Whittington was the all-star player at Quiro. And in the second half, they ran Wildcat. They snapped him the ball every single time. They didn't throw a pass. He just ran it, and we couldn't stop the guy.
Right.
So
right. It's go ahead.
Well, in college and in the pros, if you don't have a really good quarterback, it seems to me you're not going to win. So do you see it that way?
Absolutely. I think the as you get higher in the game, the quarterback becomes more critical, and you could be a good football team, but most of the teams that win it all, both at the college and the professional level, they're playing with an elite quarterback.
Coach, how come, and I had Tim Tebow on the program about a year ago, and I forgot to ask him this question, would have been a difficult question, but how can you have a guy that is so good in college and not as a quarterback, I mean just the top of the heap, and not make it in the pros?
Well, part of it is, you know, the game is different, and part of it, some guys' game does not translate to the pros as well as others. And you mentioned Tim Tebow. I mean, maybe certainly one of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time. And he had a solid pro career. The average life expectancy for a player in pro football is usually just under 4 years. But he certainly didn't have the success at the professional level that he had at the college level. And you know, Tim's game was he was a tremendous leader, mm-hmm. And tremendous runner, tough as nails. You know, he wanted the ball when the game was on the line. But he wasn't a great passer at that level. You know, for that reason, I think that's why his game didn't translate to being, you know, the same kind of success he had in college as a Heisman Trophy winner.
How about somebody like Vince Young?
I think Vince was similar. You know, Vince was the first quarterback taken after our 05 championship team. And Vince had worked very hard to become a quarterback. And by that I meant when Vince came in, he was a great athlete that was playing quarterback. By the time he left, he was a great quarterback that was also a great athlete. And you know, people seem to forget that as a true rookie in the National Football League, he was offensive. Rookie of the year. He was a Pro Bowl quarterback. He was well on his way to becoming the quarterback that certainly the Titans and everybody else thought he would be. Vince has a unique story, and, you know, he could share that story. I'll just say this. I think in the grand scheme of things, Vince got some poor advice. And maybe didn't handle everything as well as he could have or would have, and because of it, you know, his career was cut short. Mm-hmm. He was also, Jeff, if you will remember, he was a little bit ahead of. It's okay to have a dual threat quarterback.
Yeah,
you know, I think guys like Vince and Michael Vick helped guys like Lamar Jackson because, you know, they were the first guys to come in and have some success at that level, being able to run and throw. And at one time, you know, the NFL was, we just want a guy to stand in the pocket and deliver the ball. And now, I think everybody would like somebody like a Patrick Mahomes that can extend a play and can make things happen with his feet.
Well, I've maintained this. Let me see if you agree or disagree. That if I were an AD or a college football coach, and I had one pick for the first player taken all time, I'd take Vince over anybody.
Well, obviously, I agree with you. plus, he's still a friend of mine. And yes. He's 6'5", 240. I'm not going to make Vince mad. No, he was a very unique guy. He was a tremendous competitor. Vince did not get the credit that here's an example. I always said Major Applewhite did not get the credit he deserved at Texas for being as athletic and as good a passer as he was, mm-hmm. because everybody couldn't wait to tell you how smart Major was.
Right.
And he was. Brilliant. Well, everybody, the first thing that comes up when Vince Young is mentioned is, oh, my God, could he run? Was he tough? Was he physical? And Vince, on the flip side, doesn't get the credit for being the passer he was. Mm-hmm. That, people forget that in the national championship game in 05, he completed 30 out of 40 passes against USC. Mm. That's not bad.
That's pretty good.
He was a great player. He was the greatest quarterback I ever coached. And I had, all the way back, Gary Kubiak at Texas A&M. I mean,
oh, wow.
I was fortunate enough to coach, seven or eight guys that, that continued to play in pro football.
So, yeah.
He was something special.
So Gary Kubiak, my sister married David Kubiak, who's a cousin of Gary's. David played at Sam Houston State back in the day. I didn't know if you knew him. He was a high school football coach for his career. But, small world. Well, Coach, you spent a lot of time with Mack Brown, and you guys were good friends. And, boy, those had to be great years.
Mm. Oh, they were. I mean, Mack and I hooked up back in the early 80s. He brought his staff, his offensive staff. He was a coordinator at LSU to A&M to visit, and that's where we first met when I was at A&M. And we spent three or four days together, our offensive staff and his offensive staff, and that's where the friendship began. And then when he left LSU, LSU offered me his position, basically based on his recommendation. I did not go because I was enjoying A&M. But anyway, several years later, when he became the head coach at Tulane, I joined him there. I took over when he left. Got back with him at North Carolina, and then came to Texas in 1998 with him. And I was his coordinator there for 13 years. So, yes, we go back a ways. We've had many a ball games together.
Well, I saw a clip or a quote from you. This was online, Coach Davis. You talked about the Iowa coach when you finished your career at Iowa, Kirk Ferentz. Is that how you say his last name?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So he had a quote that, and this is what you said: "The men who leave this program are prepared for life, for careers, to be great husbands and fathers." And I thought, that is so good. And that reminds me of what Mack Brown said after you guys won the national championship. I thought it was one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard. And I told him this when he came to Texarkana to visit Barry. I said, "Coach, the greatest quote I ever heard is when you told those guys after they won, don't let this be the greatest moment in your life. You go and be good husbands and good fathers and make a difference in your community." And I thought, man, what a time to instill that in young guys' minds and hearts. And that just made me love the guy even more.
It was. Yeah, it was. Many, many people over the years have brought that to my attention or asked me about that time in the locker room. And, you know, it was such a heartfelt thing. He said, and it had great wisdom. So.
Yeah, it was just awesome. Well, we're talking to Coach Greg Davis. He was the offensive coordinator for the University of Texas for many, many years, won a national championship in 2005. And we're going to talk football today. You're listening to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here talking to Coach Greg Davis. He spent almost 44 years in coaching. He coached in high school, played high school football, played college football, and then went into coaching, began coaching in high school, and then went to the college ranks, and then made it to the University of Texas under Mac Brown as his offensive coordinator, and they worked together at the University of Texas for 13 years. They worked before that together, but came as the dynamic duo to the University of Texas, had great, great success, won a national championship in 2005. Now, I'm a UT grad, and my daughter, a middle daughter, Amy, went to UT and was part of the Texas Angels, and so I love that program. Now, Greg, I have to say that I'm maybe not a great fan because I want them to win so bad that I can get so frustrated with them. Do you share any of that as a coach?
You know, yes and no. When you're just a fan, and I don't mean to say just because college athletics doesn't survive without fans, but, all you know is that was a bad pass. That was a good pass. That was a bad play. That was a good play. We won, we lost. In many cases, the fans don't realize what happened. And Sark said it the other day. He said, you know, the offensive line gets blamed because we're not protecting Arch. You know, maybe it was the back that missed the block. Maybe it was the tight end that missed the block. Maybe a receiver saw a blitz and was supposed to break his route off, but he didn't. Maybe Arch didn't see a blitz. I mean, there's so much to it that it's not a simple answer. It's a bad pass or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so as a coach, you have a little better understanding of what they're going through when things don't look good. But do I want them to win every night the last 2 weeks in overtime have aged me? not as much as when I was calling plays. But you want them to do good. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so how difficult is it to be the head coach and the offensive coordinator? That doesn't seem like very many guys could do that.
Well, there's quite a few guys in pro football that run one side of the ball. There's not as many in college. And I think part of the reason is because the head coach in college is asked to do so many other things, from alumni to money raising to speaking for the Kiwanis and the Optimus and the Future Farmers and everybody. His day sometimes does not allow him to just sit and study film. However, having said that, Sark has an outstanding offensive mind, and he grew up on that side of the ball. He grew up calling the plays. And as he has said, that's how I got the job. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna give it up. I do think they have to do a good job of balancing their time. The other thing, Jeff, that there are so many other people in the building now that were not there when I was in college, and I don't mean just at Texas. I mean, you look at the the number of employees that the football team has. You know, five or six analysts. I mean, we had three GAs. Mm-hmm. There's a general manager. There's an assistant general manager. There's a guy who's in charge of the portal. There's a guy who's in charge of. I mean, so there are a whole lot more people involved in doing those other jobs. I think Sark feels like he has enough time to do it, and he's going to do it. So I'm all for him.
Well, Coach Davis, now it appears to me when you get to the position of head coach, like Mack Brown over that huge program, Coach Sarkisian over the Texas program, you don't really coach anymore. You have assistants and coordinators that do the coaching, position coaches that do the coaching, and you're kind of managing coaches at that point. Am I far off on that?
No, you're not. You're not. There's a everybody. The business of college football is very similar to the business of Ford Motors. It's very similar to any other business. There are more than one way to be the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
Some head coaches are like, hey, I've hired you to be the offensive coordinator, you to be the defense coordinator, you to be the special teams, and I expect your units to perform well. And I have confidence in that, and I'm going to try to give you what you need for those. And that's one way to do it. And that's the way, because of what you mentioned earlier, that's the way a whole lot of head coaches are doing it now. There's another way of doing it that says, I'm going to sit in on the offense on Monday and Wednesday, and I'm going to sit on with the defense on Tuesday and Thursday. I'm going to swing back and forth during practice so I can see both units as they're working, and I want to know totally what's going on both sides. So that's another way. And then the third way is what you're asking about is, I'm going to run one side of the ball, offense or defense. I'm going to hire somebody to run the other side, and we're going to meet on game day.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a bunch of right ways to do it. Mack early in his career, and I think he would be fine with me saying this, was very, very much involved because he grew up as an offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
As he got older and the position grew and expected more and more and more of him, then he became more like the CEO kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is my vision for this company being the University of Texas. And I want to look like this on offense and defense and special teams, and I want to look like this in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to hire people to help me achieve that goal. And he was highly successful, doing that. Hall of Fame career, as a matter of fact. So, but there are multiple ways of running a program, just as there is a business.
Well, Coach, when you're the offensive coordinator, because you also served as a head coach, what's more fun, being the head coach or being the offensive coordinator?
Oh, that one's easy. That's maybe the easiest question of the day, with one caveat. It's more fun to be the head coach at the end of the month when those paychecks come in. But it's in terms of daily working, day by day, being a coordinator is I think the most fun in the game, because you get to touch all the kids and you know them. I mean, they're almost like your children.
Yeah,
so it's a whole lot more fun.
So, on your side of the ball, if you have maybe a quarterback's coach or an offensive line coach that you're not meshing with very well, do you have the authority to get rid of him, or does that have to come from Mack?
Again, there's multiple ways of doing things. Everybody I was ever under, Jackie Sherrill, Tom Wilson, Mac Brown, Kurt Ferentz, the coordinator had a say in the hires under him, but he didn't have the final say.
Okay.
I think if a coordinator would go to a head coach and say, "Hey, Pastor Jeff, you know, this is not one of our kind of guys," I think he would think very long and hard about making a change. That's the way it's set up most of the time, that the head coach makes all the personnel decisions.
Okay, so Coach, you got out of college football before NIL became a thing. It appears to me, from the outside looking in, that NIL is ruining college football. It's making it very, very difficult for coaches. You keep players, you know, if they get mad at you because you coach them hard, they're going to go somewhere else. It just seems like we've opened Pandora's box of evils. Weigh in on that. Tell me what you think about NIL and how the state of college football.
The short answer is I totally agree with you. The more in-depth answer is right at the end. I've been retired 10 years. This is my 10th football season to be out. But right at the end of my time, Coach Ferentz came back from a Big Ten meeting, and he said, they're talking about paying the players. What do y'all think? And we had several guys on the staff that were, you know, older veteran coaches. And everybody said, "Hey, man, that'd be great." I mean, I played at McNeese from 69 to 73, and at that time we made $15 a month. It was called a laundry check. And my buddy that played, Tommy Landry, that played at the University of Texas, he made $15 a month. And my other buddy that played somewhere, everybody made $15 a month if you were a full scholarship player. So we thought when Coach Ferentz brought that up, I said, okay, well, that was back in the early 70s, and now we're talking, what's it going to be, $1,500 a month now? $2,000 a month, whatever that figure is, hey, that's great. And there's no advantage. You know, the University of Texas gives $2,000 a month, and, you know, Texas State, full scholarship player, gets $2,000 a month.
Everybody gets the same.
But that's not what happens. That's not what happened, obviously. And so I think the model that they had thought about and wanted to bring forward was a good idea that was really embraced by the coaches. But what made it to the floor and got voted in was not. And I don't think the game is as good now as it was several years ago.
No, I don't either. You know, while you were talking, Coach, I was thinking about the movie about Bear Bryant, the Junction City or Junction Boys, and just shows how brutal it was back in the day. How would the Bear do coaching today?
Well, I think he's probably happy he didn't have to worry about that. Yeah, and you know, it's a shame that. I feel certain, and I don't know this for a fact, but I feel good about saying this. That's part of the reason Nick Saban got out.
Right.
I mean, you lose something when it becomes total business. I mean, I have a friend, several friends that are in the business, and they say, you know, a guy comes in. And says, "Coach, I have to leave." "What do you mean you have to leave? I thought you enjoyed it here." "Coach, I do, but you know, y'all are paying me $300,000, and you know, State U across the line is going to offer me $700,000. I can't stay. I've got to go. And, you know, that's a shame.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I read somewhere where Sark said, if you go into the portal, you can't come back. You're off the team at that point. I think that's wise to put a line in the sand there. Otherwise, they're back and forth, back and forth.
Right.
Well, that's a shame. I was talking to somebody, well, I think it was you yesterday, that said, or somebody told me this, they're talking about trying to do NIL in high school. Is that correct?
It wasn't me that you that came up with, but yes, you are correct. There are several states that are trying to decide if that is going to be part of their high school athletics.
That's just crazy.
And I hope it's not. But and I will say this, the Texas High School Coaches Association is maybe one of the strongest coaches associations in the country and run by football men. And I would think that they would have a very strong opinion that should not go on. So,
I would hope so. Yeah. You know, as the scripture says, it's the love of money that is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and have pierced themselves with many pangs. Money's amoral, neither good nor bad, but when you start focusing in on it, when you start loving it, when everything becomes about money, it just poisons the game, or poisons the business, it poisons the heart, because it's just... it sets your mind on things that are not right. And we, obviously, in the Christian life, we're commanded to fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. Well, we're talking to Coach Greg Davis. He was the offensive coordinator at the University of Texas back in the day when Texas won the national championship in 2005 with Vince Young. And Coach Davis worked with Coach Mack Brown for many, many years. When we come back, we're going to be talking about all these coaches getting these huge payouts and how you and I can maybe get in on that. Just kidding. But you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We'll be right back after the break.
This July, we celebrate the birth of our nation and remember the heroes who fought for our freedoms. But did you know there are Americans today who don't have the freedom of life and liberty? Every day, unborn babies' very lives are under attack. But because of preborn, we can rescue them.
I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
Ultrasounds save lives. And when you save a life at a preborn network clinic, you often save a soul, as over 85,000 women have come to know Christ. To learn more about preborn's life-saving work, call #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email Pastor Jeff at FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here talking to football coach Greg Davis, retired after almost 45 years in the business of coaching young men in high school and then most of his career in college as offensive coordinator for the University of Texas for 13 years under Mack Brown and then for 7 years at Iowa under Kirk Ferentz. Just had a great, great career. Now, Coach, we had talked about these gigantic payouts that these guys are getting. So Jimbo Fisher was the biggest one at $76.8 million. He had a 40-22 record at Texas A&M. And, you know, you're not doing well, so see you later. Here's a check for $76 million. Brian Kelly just fired at LSU. They had to pay him $54 million. James Franklin fired this year at Penn State. Here's $49 million. Now, he had he had been the coach there for 12 seasons, had a 117-37 record. Gus Malzahn got $21 million. Billy Napier just fired, $21.4 million. This just seems, you know, from a fan's perspective, from an outsider's perspective, you ask yourself the question: who's making these contracts from the school's side? Because it seems ridiculous that you'd pay somebody so much money to go away. How do you see it as a guy that was on the inside?
Well, as we have talked about off the air, it's the university's fault. It's whoever created the contract. What happens is very simple. Jimbo was an anomaly. Jimbo and Scott Woodard knew each other, and that's the one A&M wanted. They went after him. They gave him a 10-year deal with all this money, 90% of it guaranteed. And when they decided to let him go, they owed him this huge amount of money. In most cases, what happens is a guy comes in, you hire a guy, and you typically hire him on a, you know, 4-5 year contract. And 3 years into it, the guy is just, I mean, he's the best thing since sliced bread. Mm-hmm. And you think, as a alumni, as a board, as an AD, I have got to lock this guy up. Mm-hmm. Because if I don't, I mean, somebody's coming after him. Somebody's coming after him, and we're going to lose him. Mm-hmm. So what do? You give him a 10-year deal, like James Franklin had. You give him this massive extension and throw all this money on top of it. And then 3 years later, instead of somebody coming after him, you're ready to get rid of him.
Right.
And I know that's not, nobody likes to be fired, but that's what the contract, that's the protection of it. The other thing that happens, and people don't understand this, and in many cases, it's not just the school that's paying that amount of money. I'm not going to mention a school. I'm not going to mention a coach, but I am going to tell you and your audience that sometimes Nike, sometimes Adidas, sometimes Puma, sometimes other factors get involved with raising the money that is needed for a coach to be let go.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a contract. Supposedly is supposed to protect both parties,
right?
You have a contract on your house. You know, I mean, okay, you can't come take my house as long as I'm doing my end and I'm paying my mortgage,
right?
And so, you know, the bank is protected and I'm protected,
right?
I blame the institutions, the universities that whoever is allowing those contracts to reach that long, long-term deal.
Coach, what do you think about...
Now,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you, so you know Scott Surratt, coach of Carthage Bulldogs, one of the greatest high school football coaches in high school football history, in my opinion. I mean, with all the wins he's had.
I think you're right.
How does a guy like that, let's say you're a school and you say, we're going out of the box. We're not going to pay these huge amounts of money. I'm going to hire Scott Surratt to be my head coach or be my offensive coordinator, even though he's never played in never coached in college. And I'm going to pay him $1 million, way under what these huge contracts are paying. Do you think a guy like Scott Surratt would be successful?
I think good coaches can coach at any level. I know Scott. I knew Scott when he was on Barry's original staff.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, I have no doubt in my mind that good coaches can coach at any level, and that Scott would be successful. The reason that is not done is, and you mentioned Scott, so I'm going to use his name. Scott is hired at LSU. He brings nothing initially to the table,
right,
in terms of splash.
Yeah.
You know, Brian Kelly? Oh, wait a minute. Isn't that the guy that was at Notre Dame? Oh, yeah. Wow, we're LSU. We just went and hired the guy from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
That's a splash. Now, yeah, as you and I know, not all splashes are good splashes. Some of them are cannonballs. But that's why that, I mean, not too long ago, within my lifetime, Notre Dame hired a high school coach.
Willingham.
I called his name right.
Wasn't it Willingham?
No. It was, he was from a Catholic high school right there.
Yeah.
In Indiana. His name will probably come to me in a minute, but,
he didn't do very well.
And he didn't do very well. That has been done, but that's why it doesn't. I mean, you've got to, it's your responsibility as a, whatever office you want to say, president, chancellor, AD. I mean, you have to protect your university.
Yeah. Now you could, somebody could hire Scott Surratt to be their OC without suffering much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that could certainly happen.
All right, now, Coach, let me ask you this. I mean, you're a football guy, but you're a sports guy. So when I think, I played basketball in high school, and I think about, I was real close to my basketball coach, and I think coaches have, in the coaching profession, has the ability to influence young guys for the Lord and for being responsible, you know, men of character, men of godliness, those kinds of things, maybe more than anybody else because they spend so much time with them. But a basketball coach coaches, the head basketball coach, I think of John Wooden, one of the greatest coaches ever. Well, mm-hmm. he had what, two or three assistants? I mean, basketball doesn't necessarily have a lot of assistants. You don't need that. You only got 12 guys. But that's a profession where you're actually going to be coaching. And as we said, in football, it seems like you disconnect from the day-to-day with the players. How does a coach in a head coach in a position like the University of Texas, not lose that connection with the players?
Well, I think that's a really good question, and I think part of the way, part of the answer to it is that you're involved in different ways. Maybe you're not sitting in a offensive line meeting and conducting the coaching of that drill, but in many cases, at places like Texas and other places I was at, you would have like a leadership committee where, you know, each class, it had nothing to do with football per se. You would say, okay, I want two freshmen elected. I want two sophomores. I want two juniors. I want two seniors. They don't have to be your greatest players. In some cases they were because those guys were leaders. And then the head coach meets with him, every Monday morning and has breakfast with him. I think the other way is, being involved in the locker room, being involved in the training room, being involved in the off season, being involved. That's where you have a chance to really get to know. Really get to know your players. One thing we always did, I did it every year I coached. At some point after the season, I would have all the quarterbacks over to my house. Mm-hmm. And then at some point in the summer, I would do the same thing during open week. But I wanted them to see me outside of the guy you know, at the whiteboard. I wanted them to see me as a husband, as a father.
Right.
And it allowed me, you know, to share my faith without beating them on the head. You know, the good book says, you know, let your light shine. It doesn't say shine a flashlight in their face. And so I tried to carry myself where they knew there was more to me than just a football coach. But to answer the question, you do have to work at it, especially if you are in a CEO type mode, because you're right. You know, there's 120 guys out there, and there's, you know, 9 assistants and a head coach and 3 strength coaches and, you know, 3 trainers, 4 trainers. And there's, right. I mean, there's people everywhere, and you're being pulled as a head coach here and there. And then, oh, but here's, you know, Joe Big Bucks just walked on the practice field. I got to go talk to him.
Right.
You know, those, it's hard.
Yeah, it would be hard. You know, that's one of the other things that I see coaches that if you go back, you know, back to the Bear Bryant days, there weren't very many coaches on the sidelines. Now you have just so many guys. Does it become hit a point where it's like there are too many cooks in the kitchen?
It certainly can be. It certainly can be. I was looking at a staff the other day of one of the universities that have let their head coach go, and I had Googled them just to see if I knew anybody on the staff, and the list of the number of people, you know, from general manager, assistant general manager, portal manager, high school relations, and then all these other, you know, senior offensive analysts, you know, junior offensive analysts, you know, I mean, it was amazing, Jeff, how many people that were under that. And if all those people have a voice with your quarterback, that's way too many. And
right.
I told the offensive coaches at Texas, and I'm certainly not alone in this, I said, there will be one guy that talks to Vince Young, to Colt McCoy, to Chris Sims, to Major Applewhite. There'll be one guy, and that's me.
Yeah. Now,
obviously, Mac Brown can talk to whoever he wants to. He's the boss. But, and all I meant was, I didn't want the receiver coach, in all good faith, a quarterback leaving the field, and the first thing he hears is, if you can hold it a little bit longer, Johnny's breaking open in the end zone.
Yeah.
You know, and then the running back coach grabbing him as he's on his way to the headset saying, man, if you can get the ball out to Tommy on the flare route quick, he's got some space. He don't need all that information. That's not information that's helpful.
Right.
What he needs is to sit down and say, okay, this is what I saw. Did I see the right thing? Emory Ballard hired me at Texas A&M ages ago.
Yeah.
And one of the great teachers of the game, and his question to the quarterback was always the same. Tell me what you saw.
Yeah.
Because what you saw creates the way you should have reacted.
Yeah.
And
well,
I
great. Greg, we are out of time, but man, this has been so wonderful. I'd love to have you back, my friend. I can talk football with you all day. We were talking to Coach Greg Davis, and thanks for listening to Real Truth for Today, Pastor Jeff Shreve. Go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as his witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.